Hello and welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. If you like the idea of sustainable weight loss that's both healthy and budget-friendly, our Nutrition for Weight Loss Foundations program is here to help you reach your health goals. With 90% of our participants experiencing weight loss, our program proves that effective long-term weight management doesn't need to be expensive or complicated. We skip the costly prepackaged meals and pills and focus on real food nutrition that's easy to incorporate into your daily routine, helping you feel energized, reducing joint pain, enhancing mental clarity, and of course, losing weight, all without straining your budget or risking your health. Whether you join us online or in person, our flexible classes are designed with your lifestyle in mind. Ready to be part of the success? Classes start the week of May 14th and spots are filling up fast. Reserve yours today at weightandwellness.com/N4WL to feel your best this summer and beyond. Thanks for tuning in to Dishing Up Nutrition and enjoy the show.
Nutrition is brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestones.
Well, welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. I am Darlene Kavith, licensed nutritionist, certified nutrition specialist, and this show is brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, a company providing life-changing nutrition education and nutrition therapy. Our co-host today is Leah Wetzel, who is also a licensed nutritionist and a certified nutrition specialist.
Yes.
And we also have a new producer this morning, so things are a little, we're a little out of balance, but we'll do it.
That's right.
So, anyway, good morning, Leah.
Good morning, Dar. It's great to be here with you today.
So, we're supposed to have a guest. So
yes.
And we're hoping that Dr. Bland will call in now, and I think maybe we've got him perhaps on the line. Leah, what do you think?
Dr. Bland?
There, I think we probably have him on the line.
And a good morning.
Oh, good morning
to you.
Great to hear you.
Oh, likewise. Thank you.
So we'll just go ahead, Leah. Let's go ahead with our show then.
Yeah, we have a great show planned today. We are very excited to have you on. And our guest today, Dr. Bland, has been called by Dr. Oz the godfather of functional medicine.
You know, we're really honored to have Dr. Jeffrey Bland join us today to discuss his new book, The Disease Delusion. That's a mouthful right there, Dr. Bland.
It certainly is.
You know, Dr. Bland has authored 5 books on nutritional medicine, which is really great. And this is for healthcare professionals, and 6 additional books on nutrition and health for just the general population. And, you know, I've read and been inspired by many of Dr. Bland's other books, but I think The Disease Delusion is such an important read today because the subtitle, this is a great subtitle, Conquering the Cause of Chronic Illness for a Healthier, Longer, Happier Life. So, Dr. Bland, we really welcome you to the show. And I believe everyone wants a healthier, longer, and happier life. You know, we live longer today, don't we? But are we living better?
Yes, I think that is really the question. And unfortunately, the time in which we live is very contradictory because we are living longer. The data is very clear. But we also are seeing a rising tide of these chronic illnesses, which include things like diabetes and hypertension and arthritis and dementia and various forms of heart disease and things that relate to our autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. All of these are conditions which are actually increasing not only in the older population, but actually, unfortunately, are increasing in younger people, where we used to think these were diseases of age, but now we're starting to see even teenagers getting type 2 diabetes and getting things that we used to reserve only for the last portion of our lives. So it really is concerning as to why we are witnessing this paradox of increasing mean average life expectancy, but also increasing disability and what I would call robbing from us the productive years of our life that we really deserve to have high-level health and enjoy what good health can bring to us. So the question is, what do we do about it? And that's what the book is all about.
That's right. Yeah. And Dr. Blend, thank you again for joining us this morning. I know it's much earlier for you in California. Is it 6 o'clock in the morning where you are?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we appreciate you getting up this early morning and sharing your wisdom with our listeners. And for the past 35 years, you've been a recognized leader in the field of nutrition. And really, kind of, what are some chronic illnesses you see in the society today? And why did you write the disease delusion?
Well, I think the most common condition that we're seeing, and everyone knows this because we hear about the rate of obesity increasing, and mm-hmm. we hear about the rate of diabetes increasing. This has often been called diabesity, and people say, "Well, where's this coming from?" I mean, I thought diabetes was something that we just got in our genes and it was inherited, and if we were unfortunate to have parents that had diabetes, and we would have a high risk of diabetes. But now we see it's much more than that, and the reason I wrote the book, and the title of the book obviously is very contradictory because we know there are diseases, so why would there be a delusion about diseases?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not a delusion that we have diseases. The delusion is where they came from. And I think that there's this sense in many people that, and including people within the medical field as well, that these diseases are basically genetically inherited. They're passed down in families. If you didn't have the luck of the draw, you might have gotten these diseases, to heart disease or dementia or to a diabetes or arthritis, and there's little you can do about it. And the 21st century aha, the big discovery that came out of the Human Genome Project, is that these diseases are not hardwired to our genes. What they are related to how we treat our genes, the kinds of experiences that we have individually that relate to our lifestyles, to our diet, our activity patterns, stress patterns, exposure to toxins, things that actually are modifiable, things that if we knew and ask the right questions, we could actually modify the way that we were treating our genes, the exposures that our genes were getting, and therefore change the way our genes were expressed. And we could turn on the white light of good health that comes from the genes that are residing within our heritage that are really the good health genes. And we could turn off the what I call the tragedy genes, which are those that associate themselves with chronic illness. And that's the real aha of the 21st century, is this discovery that we are a lot more in control of our health than we actually thought.
You know, Dr. Bland, I think I'm a perfect example of that, because several years ago, when I looked at my family history of heart disease, you know, my brothers and my mother and everyone in my family, I said to myself, well, I think you probably have some cardiovascular genes that are not very good. So I made a conscious effort to change my eating and my lifestyle so that I could, what I call, beat my genes, you know? And so far, it's working. And, you know, I have to work really hard at it. But I think if we could empower people to start thinking in terms of looking at their family history and looking at possible predispositions to some of these genes and making that decision, and I think that's what your book is basically doing. And I think this is what you've been talking to professionals for a long time about.
Yep.
Probably I was sitting in one of your lectures
yes.
at one time and saying, that's me. I think I can make a change. And so and that's kind of what we have this radio show for, is to help people realize some of these facts and not just say, because Leah, you and I hear this in classes all the time. Oh, you know, my mother had arthritis,
yeah.
so I'm going to have arthritis.
That's right.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's changing people's view of things. And
empowering them to know they can do something about it.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that the two of you are saying exactly what the key message is of the book, and that is, how do we, as individuals, know what questions to ask? Because the questions we ask determine the answers we get.
That's right.
So if we don't know what questions to ask about what are the uniqueness of our genes that we can use to power up good health, then we probably are not going to get the answers we want. And so the book is really trying to get the reader to understand what we've learned over the last 35 to 40 years that I've been involved in both clinical work and teaching, to really empower the person, the reader, to know what questions to ask in designing their own kind of a personal approach towards getting the most out of their genes. And, you know, even those people who have had a significant family history of cancer, mm-hmm. it's being found now that you can actually design certain programs that would greatly limit the relative risk of those genes that we call cancer-related genes from being expressed. And I think this is probably the best gift that we would ever learn as to how to turn on those aspects that will keep those disease genes at bay and turn on the what I call the health-giving genes that lead a long, healthy life.
You know, I think, Dr. Bland, one of the things that I think we should, when we come back, we're going to have to take a break here in a couple of minutes or a minute maybe.
Yeah.
When we come back, maybe we could kind of talk about, you know, because all your information is really based on research. It isn't just somebody's theory, is it? And so maybe, because I know I've been attending your seminars for over 25 years, and it's more than research-based. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit about that. But Leah, you're going to take us out on break?
Sure. Great. You're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition with our special guest, Dr. Jeffrey Bland, the author of The Disease Delusion. Dr. Bland has been coming to Minnesota for over 37 years to educate healthcare professionals on the most up-to-date and important nutrition research. He is a teacher of medical nutrition therapy, treating the cause of the disease, not just the symptoms. He was a research director at the Linus Pauling Institute of Science and Medicine, the co-founder of the Institute of Functional Medicine, and the founder president of the Personalized Lifestyle Medicine Institute. We'll be right back.
Here's a little weight loss math. On any given day, 100 million of us are on a diet, and we spend $20 billion a year on books, plans, bills, and surgeries. So how come for so many people, the number on the scale is so upsetting? It's like cholesterol and blood pressure numbers, higher than it should be. Are you looking for a new way to change those numbers? Then let me tell you about the Nutrition for Weight Loss program at Nutritional Weight and Wellness. Now think about it for a minute. The approach is called Nutrition for Weight Loss, not feeling too hungry to sleep for weight loss or eating icky bars for weight loss. Nutrition for Weight Loss teaches you how to eat real food to leave you satisfied and in balance, how to use nutrition to naturally bump up your metabolism. It's based on sound science, not celebrities who make millions pitching products. Are you ready to see how it adds up for you? Then dial the number at Nutritional Weight and Wellness. It's 651-699-3438 or go online at weightandwellness.com to sign up for the Nutrition for Weight Loss program.
Well, welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. You know, I love to go through Dr. Bland's book, The Disease Delusion, and pick out gems of information, such as, here's one, Dr. Suzanne Kraft, a neuropsychologist and a research team, identified what she termed diabetes of the brain as the origin of Alzheimer's in certain individuals. People who have poor blood sugar control because of their diet have been found to experience a particularly high incidence of Alzheimer's. So the conclusion is desserts, you know, like that pumpkin pie.
Coming up.
Or all that sugar.
Yeah.
That's coming up, maybe. Not for most of us, but yeah. Some of us. You know, the processed carbs, the muffins, the cereals, all have been linked to Alzheimer's.
And they've coined it type 3 diabetes, I think.
Yes.
I've heard that thrown out a lot now.
Yes.
Just quite remarkable.
So there's lots of gems of information
there
in his book.
There are.
So.
Dr. Bland? There seems to be a disconnect of what treatments available are to chronically ill people. You used a term I hadn't heard before called polypharmacy. What is polypharmacy?
Well, I think this is a very interesting part of where we are with medicine right now. And I think actually a good example of this would be this example of Alzheimer's disease that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, the drug companies have spent literally billions of dollars over the last 10 to 15 years in trying to develop a drug that would treat Alzheimer's successfully. And there have been many different scientific approaches that have been used. I won't go through them all, but have been designed to try to attack or to treat a specific component of what researchers have identified as the pathology that we call Alzheimer's disease. And unfortunately, I think we all know that this extraordinary expenditure of research money done by extraordinarily talented researchers has come up dry. There mm-hmm. hasn't been a drug that has been discovered to treat Alzheimer's. And the reason for it is that Alzheimer's, like virtually every chronic disease, is not a single condition. It's not caused by one thing. It has multiple factors that lead to its being called ultimately a disease, and it manifests itself differently from person to person. So there are no two patients that have the identical form of Alzheimer's disease, just like there's no two patients that have the identical form of type 2 diabetes or of rheumatoid arthritis. These vary in the way that they are caused and how they are seen in a person. So the way that the drug companies have approached this is to say, well, if we can't find a drug that would treat it, let's just find a family of drugs that will treat the different symptoms. So we might use three or four or five different drugs that have different mechanisms of action, so we can kind of modify the symptoms and maybe reduce the expression of the signs of the disease. This is what's called polypharmacy, and it's very common to find individuals that have accumulated over the years more and more prescriptions. And, you know, there are some people that are taking more than 10 drugs a day.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have clients that come in that have been taking like 16 to 18 different medications a day.
And then we don't know how those are interacting one with the other. They have potential adverse side effects when they interact with one another. So what this is treating the cause rather than the effect. And the functional medicine model, as you suggested in the earlier discussion, is a model that goes back and says, okay, just a minute. If these diseases are not caused by a single thing, what are the variables that individual has that we can modify that would, in fact, lead to the treatment of its cause rather than just its effect? And with Alzheimer's, we're collaborating with all sorts of different investigators, one of who is Dr. Dale Bredesen, who's in charge of the Alzheimer's Research Facility at University of California, Los Angeles Medical School. And he's just published a paper in which he talked about the ability to cause remission in 26 patients of Alzheimer's disease that were not put on drugs at all. They were put on the kinds of programs that we talk about in disease delusion that were based upon the unique individual needs of that patient, and things like getting away from sugar in their diet and getting them onto a low glycemic load diet, things like improving their mitochondrial bioenergetics by getting on certain nutrients that activate their brain's energy processes and so forth. So this is the new medicine of the 21st century, and that's really the reason I wrote the book, was to try to make this accessible to people now so they wouldn't have to wait another 10 to 15 years before it started to be well understood.
A lot of it sounds like it's based on what people are putting in their mouth, their nutrition and probably their exercise patterns. Things that we talk about all the day, every day, and I hope we help people to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always our goal, is to help people actually do these plans on a day-to-day basis, you know, not just for, you know, to lose a few pounds. You know, that doesn't really work, not to just, you know, but to do it day after day. You know, I've had clients that for 15 years. Mm-hmm. That they come in once a month for 15 years because, you know, maybe they're recovering from cancer or, you know, who knows, you know, depression, different types of chronic illnesses.
Well, I think what you're doing in your show and what you just described is exactly the fundamental approach that we're talking about in disease delusion, that, you know, for instance, the food of one can be the poison of another. We all know that.
That's
so,
right.
You know, the concept that there is one good diet or one perfect diet for everybody is ridiculous when
that's
we actually
right.
understand the nature of genes and the variety of the ways that they are expressed in different individuals. So the question is, what's the right approach for you? Not what somebody else said, or even your brother or sister would say, oh, I'm on a great program. Well, that's great, but what is it for the individual? And that's what we're really trying to get to in disease delusion, using the kind of information that we've developed over the last 30 years to assess individual unique needs.
That's great, yeah.
You know, Dr. Millian, I just, at our office, we just created a nice 4-hour seminar on menopause. And so Leah, you have a question, I think, for Dr. Bland.
I do.
All right.
I do. Would you help explain to the listeners the findings of the Women Health Initiative study, the use of HRTs or hormone replacement therapy, and the increased risks of heart disease and dementia?
Yes, I think that's a very good example, actually, of this general topic we're discussing as it relates to preventing chronic illness. You know, the concept of hormone replacement therapy, which was born out of discoveries made back in the late 1950s and 60s as it relates to the influence that estrogen had on minimizing the symptoms of perimenopause, which includes things like hot flushing and night sweats and dysphoria or depression in women going through the change around 50 years of age into menopause. There was no question that when these women were given what at that time was called Premarin, Premarin being a drug that was really built out of equine hormones, horse hormones, basically horse female pregnant mares that were then we took their urine and the drug companies isolated these hormones, and that became the drug Premarin, and women were taking this. So it was said that by giving women estrogen, it not only would reduce their risk of these perimenopausal symptoms and reduce some of the suffering they were having, but it would also, they said, when given along with Provera, which is a synthetic progesterone derivative, that it would reduce their risk of heart disease, which sounded pretty good. You know, and strengthen their bones, reduce heart disease, maybe reduce the risk of cancer, and make them feel better. Wow. This is sounds like the golden solution. There are many people, however, that question this, even back in the 1960s and early 1970s, saying, now, just a minute, you know, we don't know what these equine hormones, these horse hormones, do in human women's bodies, mm-hmm. what might be the long-term effects. And to make a long story short, finally, after many decades, we got a woman who was in charge of the National Institutes of Health. We'd never had a woman in that position, and she said, you know, women's health issues ought to be the fundamental way that we research some of the things that we believe to be true. We ought to actually do studies in women. That would sound like a pretty amazing big discovery, because before that, all these studies were done in men. So they they took on this what was called Women's Health Initiative, which was to evaluate certain things that women were being treated with, one of which were these hormones, Premarin and Provera, for the treatment of menopause. And lo and behold, when the data finally came in this study that was a very large study done in centers around the United States, they found that it wasn't that these medications actually protected against heart disease. They actually increased the incidence of heart disease. Mm-hmm. And this was like, whoa, now hold it, how could this happen when we've been prescribing these for years and years and they've been said to be safe and effective, and now suddenly we're being told they're ineffective? Well, again, this comes back a little bit to genetics, because it turns out that there are certain women who carry certain genes that are much more sensitive to these horse hormones and Provera in terms of an adverse effect that produces blood clotting and the ultimate risk to a stroke or heart attack than other women. And so this sudden level of disillusionment occurred within women's health medicine, saying, you know, let's go back and really examine what we're doing when we start treating these symptoms that women have with a drug, because many of these symptoms are actually modifiable by just properly managing their diet and lifestyle. If we do that correctly, we can reduce these very serious menopausal symptoms, and we can do so in such a way as to not increase the risk to heart disease or cancer or stroke. And that, to me, has been a major breakthrough in women starting to take charge of their bodies for the first time and not being sold a bill of goods that could put them into trouble.
That's right.
You know, I think, Dr. Bland, just kind of basic information for women, because I think there's still a fair number of women that are taking hormone replacement and people are still taking Premarin. And I think because they just are so concerned about hot flashes. And I know in the seminar last Saturday, I was talking about, you know, if you quit eating sugar, you know, and basically you have to give up that muffin in the morning or some of those basic things, or the licorice at night, or, you know, the glass of wine at night or the two glasses of wine, that probably the hot flashes would decrease considerably and probably go away. And this is like a new connection for people. just kind of this basic information. We've been so programmed to believe that we need to have a medication to control symptoms versus looking at what we're really eating. And I guess that's your message, and that's our message, too.
That's
so
right.
I know, Leah, we have to take
care. Yeah.
If I could just interrupt and say that in this case, you're absolutely right, because if you start looking at really controlled research studies that have been published in women, in which women started to eat more soy foods that contain compounds called genistein and diazine, which helped normalize estrogen levels in perimenopausal women, and they start to consume things like Siberian ginseng, which has a normalizing effect on hormones. There are a whole series of plant-derived materials, including cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, that have a positive impact on helping a woman to properly metabolize her estrogens and her progesterones that are made in her body, so that she gets maximum benefit of those even when her ovarian function is starting to decline. Those types of dietary interventions, those types of even supplementary nutrients when given in appropriate doses, have been found in clinically controlled studies to actually do exactly what you're saying.
That's right.
Safely and effectively modulate hormones in perimenopausal women so that those hot flushes don't become a problem and she doesn't have to rely on drugs that might produce a risk.
Right.
That's great.
Good, great information.
Break time again, unfortunately.
Break time, okay.
So hold on the line. You are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. I want to share another gem of information from Dr. Bland's book, The Disease Delusion. BPA, a common compound found in our environment because it has been used for decades to keep plastic flexible, and is also found in many water bottles, sports equipment, DVDs, and other products, has been found to accumulate in our bodies because it does not break down. Its levels is actually measurable in our urine. Elevated urinary levels of BPA has been associated with an increased risk of diabetes, heart disease, and childhood obesity. Now, that is why the use of BPA has now been banned in baby bottles and sippy cups.
It's great. And so people can really look at this and know what the risks that they're taking.
That's right. That's right. So. We'll be right back.
Well, welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. The week of November 17th, we're offering our Nutrition for Weight Loss program in St. Paul, Wayzata, Maple Grove, Mendota Heights, and North Oaks. If you're wondering, will this work for me? Well, 96% of Nutrition for Weight Loss program participants reported having better health. So this is what Barb, one of the participants, said about her success. I'm happy to report I've lost 62 pounds, dropped 4 dress sizes, stop my sugar cravings, have more energy, and no more knee pain or heartburn.
Wow, that's amazing.
You know, we're addressing the cause and not just the symptoms,
that's right. The
number on the scale.
Mm-hmm.
So to sign up, call 651-699-3438, or you can go to weightandwellness.com to sign up.
Great.
And Dr. Bland, we had a caller that was wondering if your book is an audio book. Already, or?
Yes, it is, actually. And, you know, that's very interesting. The gentleman that actually did the audio version, he has a wonderful voice, by the way. I wish I had such a good voice.
You have a great voice.
You do.
He was really remarkable. He and I spent quite a bit of time talking together because there's a lot of words in the book that
yes.
he was not familiar with. He wanted to get the pronunciation just exactly right, And when I listened to the audiobook, I thought, wow, he really is a good study. It's a very listenable delivery. So, yes, it is in audio form.
Great. Awesome. So kind of tying into what we've been already talking about with female health, this station, MyTalk 107.1, is all about TV and movie and star gossip. So back when Angelina Jolie had the double mastectomy, because she carried the BRCA mutation, everyone learned about breast cancer risk and carrying the BRCA gene. In your book, you explain the incidence of breast cancer in women with BRCA gene before 1940 was about 24%. And by 2013, the incidence was 85%. Dr. Bland, why is this increase happening?
Well, there you go. I'm so glad that you brought that example out, because I think it really characterizes the whole nature of what I'm trying to get across in the book, This is a pretty revolutionary discovery, I think. Dr. Mary Claire King, who was the researcher that actually discovered the BRCA1 and 2 genes and their relationship to breast cancer, she was at the time at the University of California at Berkeley. Now she's at the University of Washington School of Medicine, and actually she just won the Lasker Award this year in medicine, which is one of the most prestigious awards next to the Nobel Prize for her discovery. She actually published a paper not too many years ago in a very prestigious journal called Science Magazine, in which she pointed out that, as you said, that women who had this BRCA1 and 2 gene, this breast cancer supposed gene, the double allele, meaning they got it from both their mother and their father, so it was like the worst example, that their incidence of breast cancer as they grew up was less than 30% of the women, meaning 70% of the women with the gene didn't get their genes, didn't get breast cancer. But today, that exact same genetic situation, now women get breast cancer more than 85% of the time. So she raises the question, if the genes didn't change, what did change that led to such a great increase in the way those genes express themselves into breast cancer? Mm. And, of course, the wild card is the environment of the woman, her diet, her lifestyle, the things she's exposed to. These are modifiable factors. So, yes, it is unfortunate that a woman might have got the bad luck of the draw and gotten the double allele of BRCA1 and 2. But the other part of the story is, even in that very extreme case of relative risk, the modification of how those genes get expressed in breast cancer is directly related to things related to her lifestyle and environment. So I think this is to me a real aha, because most of us would say, well, that's a genetic disease. There's nothing we can do about it. Now we're seeing even those extreme cases of high genetic risk, it's still modifiable if the right things can be done to improve the way those genes are expressed. And that's, if it's that case for BRCA1 and 2, then think about things that are less genetically linked, like type 2 diabetes, where there's a very, very low relationship between genes and diabetes. It's related to how we treat our genes. So this is, to me, the aha of our age. This gives us a huge amount of control over our health. We just have to know what to do, and that's the reason for the book.
Great.
And so let's, as long as we're talking about women's health, you had a section on statin drugs and using them with women. Would you, Dr. Bland, will you just talk a little bit about that? Because I know for myself, with my so-called genetic history of cardiovascular problems, that's one of the issues that I always have to deal with when I go into some of my doctors, yeah. Not all of them, I have to say, is, you know, should you be taking a statin drug or not?
Well, I want to compliment both of you. I think that, you know, your ability to tease out really some little pearls out of the book is very, very tremendous. So let's talk quickly about statins. As you know, women, as they go through the menopause and grow older, their relative risk to heart disease actually starts to exceed that of men of the same age. You know, we used to think that heart disease was a male disease, and in younger individuals, that is true, that men more frequently get heart disease than women. But after menopause, if you compare age to age, women it's the major cause of illness and premature death in postmenopausal women, and it exceeds that in men, actually. And so people have asked the question, shouldn't women be on statins mm-hmm. to lower their cholesterol and to reduce their risk of heart disease? And as a consequence of that, the guidelines that most doctors are using for treating of cholesterol would have women in menopause on statins. And then suddenly a study was published, this is just a few years ago, in which it was found when they surveyed women that were menopausal that had been on statins, that they found they had an extraordinary increase in diabetes. Mm. And in fact, almost a 50% increase in diabetes, or almost twice the rate, as a consequence of some interaction between statins and their body's metabolism. And so people started asking, well, how could this be? Because aren't we preventing heart disease in these women? Why would they get diabetes? And it turns out that these statin drugs, I won't get into too much of the details of the mechanism, but let's just say what they do in some women is to poison the energy centers of her body, which are the energy powerhouses called the mitochondria. And these mitochondria are necessary for the proper metabolism of sugar in the blood, glucose. And so when you start adversely affecting mitochondria and you can't metabolize sugar, the result is what we call diabetes. So it brought us once again to remember that there are no drugs that are safe for every human being, that we have to look at the relative individual risk. We have to ask, what's the benefit to the risk? And in the case of postmenopausal women being put on statin drugs, there is a relative risk to diabetes. So then that begs the question, what do we do if we want to lower the risk of heart disease, but we don't want to increase the risk of diabetes? And here is where individualized, personalized lifestyle intervention becomes the savior, because we can lower, and we've demonstrated in many, many studies that we have published over the years, we can lower heart disease risk and cholesterol and inflammation that's associated with heart disease very, very significantly by personalized lifestyle and diet intervention in women without needing statins, so we don't have to run the risk of type 2 diabetes. That's the lesson of the day.
That's a great lesson.
That's right. Well, unfortunately, it's break time again. You were listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. Dara and I both want to very much thank you, Dr. Bland, because he's also been very instrumental in developing the certified process for certified nutrition specialists, which we both carry. We are both our certified nutrition specialists. And he continues to provide leadership and knowledge, the passion of scientific research to move the practice of nutrition to a level of importance so we can help clients understand the cause of the disease and to find the solutions. So thank you very much, Dr. Bland.
And we just wanted to tell you that before we run out of time.
Because yes, that's right.
But we need to go on a break. Thank you.
When my family starts with, what's for dinner, what's for dinner? Sometimes I feel the answer is a plate of desperation with a big side of stress. With no plan, it's too easy to hit the drive-thru or the deli for a meal that's overpriced and overprocessed. But now there's an answer to the daily dining dilemma, the Weight and Wellness Way Cookbook and Nutrition Guide. Because it's a cookbook, it's got recipes sure to become family favorites. Because it's a nutrition guide, it explains how to eat for good health. You'll feel good, too, eating real food that tastes delicious. The nutrition educators at Nutritional Weight and Wellness have helped thousands of people use nutrition science to feel their best. And now you can find their wisdom summed up in one book. Then the next time they start with, what's to eat? You can say wild rice meatballs or easy almond chicken or an egg bake for brunch. Real food and real nutrition will make it real easy with the Weight and Wellness Cookbook and Nutrition Guide. Get your copy for $24.95 at any Nutritional Weight and Wellness location or online at weightandwellness.com.
Dishing Up Nutrition. And I'm sure many of you will be interested in picking up The Disease Delusion or learning more about the work Dr. Bland is currently conducting. Dr. Bland in 2002 started a nonprofit organization called Personalized Lifestyle Medicine Institute. And Dr. Bland, maybe just tell listeners what you were hoping to accomplish when you started that institute. And then the other question I have, and let you be thinking about that, what's your thoughts about the increase in autoimmune diseases these days?
Well, thank you. I became very convinced that I had the privilege, because I've traveled over 6 million miles the last 25 years, and
wow,
met so many remarkable people around the world that are doing extraordinary things to help us understand better how to take charge of our health, that I needed to find ways of getting that information more effectively out to people so that they didn't have to travel the 6 million miles and they could maybe get the benefit of these conversations that I've had. So we established the Personalized Lifestyle Medicine Institute as kind of an information clearinghouse to provide this information and interviews with people that I've met and experiences that I've had through different kinds of meetings I've been to. And then we kind of grew that up with a group of about 40 professionals that are friends and colleagues of mine around the world that are blogging and bringing their information to the internet. So PLMI is kind of an information clearinghouse. It's an information site for new things and new discoveries that are being made in health and personalization of healthcare from lifestyle medicine perspective or lifestyle healthcare perspective. And so we can be found on the internet at PLMInstitute.org. PLMInstitute.org is where you can kind of find us and get a sense as to what's going on at the frontier of the new developments in this exciting field.
Sounds great.
Now, as it relates to autoimmune disease, I think that's another really wonderful example of this whole theme that we've been talking about, and that is autoimmune disease is really 88 different diagnoses, including things like rheumatoid arthritis and systemic lupus erythematosus and myasthenia gravis problems related to celiac disease and type 1 diabetes and thyroiditis and all these different named diseases. And what they really relate to is the body's immune system producing what are called antibodies against our cells and starting to attack our cells. So it's thought of as a family of diseases that the body's allergic to itself, basically, and kind of killing the host. Well, this is the old model of autoimmune disease. The new model, which I describe in the book, is that the body's not actually producing antibodies against itself. It's producing antibodies against our cell that has been damaged. It's against tissues that have undergone changes, so they're no longer the same as they should be. They've been slightly modified by things such as glycation from too much blood sugar, or by oxidation from free radical oxidation, or from problems related to protein conjugation that come from difficulties that our immune system faces as it relates to chronic infection. And so if you actually ask the question, what causes our body to apparently become allergic to itself, not just blunting the immune system, because you probably know now the drugs that we use to treat these autoimmune diseases are immune suppressive drugs. They have names like Enbrel, and they are drugs that actually put a blanket over the immune system so that it can't operate effectively. They do then shut down the inflammation, but they also increase the risk to infection by the fact that they adversely affect the immune system. So the question is not can you shut down the immune system, but can you get it to behave correctly because you've lowered the number of foreign things floating around your body that your immune system is reacting to? And the answer, once you ask that question, is absolutely yes. And in the chapter I have in the book that discusses this whole concept of immune recognition, I talk about the research that's been done to produce diets and lifestyles that actually would lower the burden on the immune system to take away the cause that ultimately relates to autoimmune disease, rather than just taking a drug that actually puts a blanket over the immune system and suppresses it.
Yeah, that's great.
I think that's a wonderful explanation.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've only got a few minutes left, but Leah, you were going to ask Dr. Bland a question, I think.
Yeah, so in your book, you talk about how much money we spend on chronic disease. We spend over $9,000 per person per year. Diabetes rates have tripled, $43 million on mental illness, and how it's time for a change in our medical model, and that we need to treat the cause and not just the symptom. So really, kind of, what do you mean by that? And then I think you really highlight nicely with your 7 core concepts of imbalance to give people questions that they need to answer to see, do they fit in any of those areas of imbalance and what to do about it?
Well, I think that's really kind of where the tire meets the road, question. We not only have this rising tide of expense to treat chronic disease in the United States, in fact, over 75%, of our healthcare expenditures are now spent on treating chronic disease versus acute disease, but this is a global problem. It's a global problem that is rising so rapidly that it is going to bring the economics of the world to its knees. I recently was in China, and I can't believe in the 25 years I've been going to China how increased the prevalence is now of these conditions of chronic illness, particularly diabetes. Which was virtually very uncommon when I first started going to China 25 years ago. Similarly, in India, it's a virtual epidemic of type 2 diabetes and its relationship to heart disease. It's occurring in India. Similarly, in Brazil and other developing countries. So it's not just the United States issue alone. This is a global problem. Mm-hmm. And it's not because our genes suddenly just changed. We're talking about global changes in diseases that have occurred within the last 2 decades, that is not just because of bad genes. It's because we are feeding our genes or exposing our genes to bad information that is creating then the expression that we call disease. So I think that we not only have important need for ourselves to reduce the burden of chronic disease, and although we are spending in the United States almost 50% more in healthcare per person than any other country in the world. We are ranked 42nd in health outcomes from the World Health Organization. This is what the economists would call diminishing returns: spend more, get less.
Yeah.
So we have to do something different. It's not just solely because it would be good for people, and we have this humanistic compassionate concern. That's certainly important. But it's also that we just cannot sustain this financially. And we're going to get into a health system in which we have haves and have-nots. We have those people that can pay for this expensive medicine, and then the majority of the people who will not get quality medicine because they can't afford to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have to find a new model, a new approach, and that's what this book is all about. We don't have to invent it. It already exists. We just have to implement it. We have to think differently, act differently, and we have to leverage the extraordinary revolution of new information that's come out about how our genes function that would then allow us today to turn this health issue around.
That's great.
Thank you, Dr.
Bland.
We so appreciate you being on Dishing Up Nutrition. Thank you very much.
You two are doing a fantastic job. Thanks for the...
All its petals on me. Life, I love you. All is groovy.
Thanks for listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. The content and opinions expressed are those of the hosts or presenters. They are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. Statements made with respect to products have not been evaluated by the FDA.